seachtain an Indo-Ascaliger.
Táim I mon iarachtaí a dhéanamh teacht ar a chorp, agus súlagam amach an seo gur féidir é a chur in uaig ceart lena bhaintir féin.
Scíltaí, fios, tuairimí.
Tá sé dochreite nach bhféadfach ara i gcuirna meáin an cheist sin a eicáil.
Bhí an talam a gnám go raibh orthcháir in reachtam. Iadach sé tarann go raibh an orthcháir san i lis dúthail agus go mina fnacht gáir a chlig sár ducha sin éair. Ná ní bhíon ann tar d'oraach sé sin. Vin Marav.
Shachtan. Find us on all the usual podcast platforms.
Remember, you can stay up to date on the latest news with the Irish Independent WhatsApp channel. This is an Irish Independent podcast.
Incels are quite an extreme group of the manosphere. It's a misogynistic male supremacist group who are angry at women because they feel they don't have sexual access to women. And so they see women as like the enemy because they won't have sexual relationships with them. We only really have access mainly online to their content, but it's a lot of very intense misogyny, a lot of self-hatred as well. Like a lot of this content preys on male insecurity.
Does that mean that they feel that they are rejected?
Yeah.
Okay, and they're rejected by women?
By women, and they go to these sites where people are saying, this is women, they're biologically programmed to behave this way, it's not your fault, this is the way the world's set up. You are in a hierarchy of men and you are at the bottom, and therefore you're kind of predetermined to be a loser.
Hello and you're welcome to The Big Tech Show with me, Adrian Weckler. Now, are social media platforms unduly skewing the minds of young males, of young boys and young teenagers in what they show those boys unprompted, no matter what they go looking for? Well, Dublin City University's Anti-Bullying Centre has just done a large piece of research on this by Dr. Catherine Baker, Professor Debbie Ging and Dr. Maya Brandt Andreasen. And Dr. Catherine Baker is in studio with us to talk about it. You're welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Now, you took 10 blank smartphones and you created 10 accounts from scratch. Two 16-year-olds, two 18-year-olds and one blank. And then you picked YouTube, YouTube Shorts and TikTok. So overall, what did you find?
So we did 5 accounts on each platform. So the 5 accounts on YouTube Shorts and TikTok. And what we found is we did 2 types of accounts. So half of the accounts were what we called manosphere curious. So young boys who were showing a slight interest in kind of popular manosphere content. So Andrew Tate, that kind of thing. But then also we set up phones for boys who were interested in more gender normative content. So like the gym, men's mental health, video games. And we were kind of interested in seeing the difference in recommended content. And for both phones, quite toxic content was recommended.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's a couple of big terms thrown in there at the beginning. I'm going to start with manosphere, this term. Well, how do we think of manosphere?
So the manosphere is kind of broadly defined as a kind of disparate but overlapping groups online focused around men's issues and misogyny. And it ranges from everything kind of like you might have heard of incels to more Andrew Tate content. And it focuses around anti-feminism, misogyny.
So yeah, because in the report, it helpfully specifies that in, I think, the late 2010s, there were 4 main groupings, I think, in what's termed as the manosphere. One was pickup artists. Second one was men going their own way. A third one, traditional conservatives. And then the fourth were incels or involuntary celibates. Now, I think you've mentioned Andrew Tate, for example. Would he have slotted into the pickup artist category?
Yeah, so it's very interesting because the pickup artist one was the one that kind of declined through the early noughties and was replaced by these more online groups like incels, etc. But what we're seeing now is a kind of reinvigoration of that with this influencer culture.
Of the pickup artists?
Of the pickup artists.
So they have kind of rebranded themselves as influencers.
It's like a different trend of them. It's not the same people, but it would have the most similar characteristics, I'd say. It's very focused on here's how to be a man, here's tips, here's the correct way to behave to fulfill a male role and to get women, etc.
And that, because I've seen a few Andrew Tate clips. I think we all have. You can't be on the internet and not have seen it. And it was a very crude formula of kind of ultra masculinity and kind of trying to attract women by being a very rude type of crude kind of bloke. The incel thing, though, what is that? What is an incel?
I actually did my PhD on incels.
Okay.
So you're talking to the right person. Incels are quite an extreme group of the manosphere, and it's a misogynistic group, male supremacist group, who are angry at women because they feel they don't have sexual access to women, and that is turned as blame of women. So they see women as like the enemy because they won't have sexual relationships with them.
And there's an awful lot in there. And how do we break that down? So how does that manifest itself? What does someone who's categorized it as an incel, how do they act? What do they say?
Well, we only really have access mainly online to their content, but it's a lot of very intense misogyny, a lot of self-hatred as well. Like, this is a thing we also saw in the online content, is a lot of this content preys on male insecurity. So, you know, young men specifically have a lot of body insecurity, insecurity about their lifestyle.
And that's all of us, right? We all have body insecurity, right? So, but an incel then, is it that when you say they don't have access, they feel they don't have access, does that mean that they feel that they are rejected?
Yeah.
Okay. And they're rejected by women?
By women. And they turn that into, they go to these sites where people are saying, this is women. They're biologically programmed to behave this way. It's not your fault. This is the way the world's set up. You are in a hierarchy of men and you are at the bottom. And therefore, you're kind of predetermined to be a loser.
So they go seeking this out. They go seeking out advice that tells them that they're actually at the bottom of the pile.
I think that's what separates incels from probably the stuff we're talking about on TikTok and YouTube, which is kind of more of a advice. Here's how to be an alpha man. Here's the kind of tips to succeed. Whereas incels are kind of a small subgroup who've gone the other way into a very negative, kind of fatalistic approach.
So this might sound like a stupid question, but do incels and these alphas, the pickup artists, do they get on or are they completely different?
I'd say they're quite different. Like when we're talking about the study we did, we were talking about recommended content on TikTok and YouTube. Incels mainly exist on forums, kind of less so on these mainstream social media platforms.
Well, maybe we'll have you back on at some point to talk about incels, because it does sound like a fascinating...
I spent a lot of time thinking about them.
a fascinating topic. So that's the manosphere. Mm-hmm. Now, some of the toxic influencers that came up, some of the names that repeatedly came up, I will admit, I know most of them or know of most of them, and there are a few I don't know. So on TikTok and YouTube, it was the same names, but in different percentages. So you had Andrew Tate, we've just spoken about. Jordan Peterson, who is, depending on how you define him, he's a self-help guy, or he's reinforces certain stereotypes. Donald Trump, we've all heard of him. Tristan Tate, is he related to
Andrew
Tate? Brother, okay. Myron Gaines.
Yeah, it's very interesting. So I think the biggest shift we've seen in the manosphere, which is reflective in this piece, is this kind of takeover of influencer culture. You know, I was talking about forums. Now it's moved to this kind of influencer culture. And I think the fact we're seeing all these new names is indicative of the fact there is a market for this, a monetized market. Mm. You know, Andrew Tate showed he got 12 billion views before he was deplatformed. And a lot of people now are copying this model because they know it's a way of getting a large audience of men, of making money and like monetizing male insecurity, really.
Yeah. And some of the other names in the YouTube Shorts actors, Piers Morgan is in there, which I'm kind of half surprised to see his name. I mean, kind of an opportunist. He'll kind of make money out of anything.
Yeah, I think there was interesting. So this is more on TikTok. We saw that. So the algorithms work in a way that they often associate, okay, if you're interested in one type of content, you may be interested in a different type of content. Mm. So let's say an innocuous example, you are interested in baking videos. They may be like, people who like baking also like gardening. So let's look at some gardening. But in the case of this kind of content, they're seeing people who are interested in the manosphere and then also being like, you might be interested in this reactionary right-wing content. Mm. You know, the Matt Walsh's, the Ben Shapiro's, that kind of thing. And it's kind of sending young people another rabbit hole. And that's
Ben Shapiro is one of the biggest YouTubers. And on Facebook, I've seen charts showing Ben Shapiro dominating online news metrics. So, and that is one thing I wanted to ask is, does the direction of travel of these recommended videos, does it differ significantly from what you might see for adult males or do we know?
It's hard to know. I think we specifically looked at boys under 18 because of the concerns that had been raised from parents, teachers, etc. We know from research that Andrew Tate had a huge popularity among younger boys, and they're often more vulnerable to this type of content. So I don't think that the exposure would be very different. We were just wondering whether the platforms would not show this to boys under 18, basically, and they did.
And there's another question around that, around the social media platforms, their responsibilities and their algorithms. Overall, what do we think the impact or the damage might be to boys in seeing this?
Well, I think I'll just speak from the experience of having watched all this content. I practically was involved in the research, watching over and over this content. And it's not a nice worldview to be embedded in. It's very, very toxic. It's very isolating. It's individualistic, and it kind of paints this idea of everyone's against you. You know, women are toxic, feminism's out to get you, you know, they're all out to get you. And that's just a harmful idea. It also talks about, there was a lot of misinformation around mental health. So depression isn't real. Therapy is for weak men. Just go to the gym, you know, get rich quick. And for young men, you know, we know there's a crisis of mental health among young men. And those kind of attitudes about masculinity are tied to that, you know, don't talk about your feelings, stoicism, this kind of like man up kind of attitude was so prevalent.
And that was a really interesting part of the report, this idea of stoicism. I didn't realize that stoicism was being kind of leveraged in a way to, you know, in this context, because I go into Waterstones or wherever, I see the stoicism section. They're kind of interesting books, you know, it's quite interesting sort of philosophy in how to deal with life, how to deal with things like loss or you know, the death of a loved one, stuff like that. But it's being somehow transmogrified, is it?
Yeah, it's this kind of simplified idea that the way to be a man is to be kind of stoic, hold your emotions in. I mean, there was a quote I already jumped out to me at one of the Jordan Peterson quotes, which was, you need to be the strongest person at your dad's funeral and not cry to support other people.
But I've seen Jordan Peterson cry on TV.
Yeah, so I think they are quite like flexible ideologically. They kind of do what is the thing they think will get views, I would say.
Yeah, interesting. What about the social media networks themselves? Do you know whether they have rules about this? Do they treat all content neutrally, simply to maximize attention? Do they attach any labels or degrees or levels according to this kind of content?
There is this kind of stuff in place. I don't think goes far enough, but like things like Andrew Tate was banned from the site last year. However, we saw quite a lot of his content still, because it was an account-specific banning rather than content. So extreme content, like on TikTok especially, you will not get away with violence or nudity or drugs. That stuff is very quickly wiped. But with more of this, you know, if it's right-wing or antagonistic or misogynistic, this stuff is kind of harder to define, it proliferates much more.
And I wonder, is this any reflection, again, of a general drift online to kind of a center-right right direction? I mean, I would be very familiar with the culture wars on X, for example, and there's a reason why that has drifted right. And part of the reason is because the guy who bought it, and he has introduced a system where you pay a monthly fee if you want to be verified, and that content is promoted and prioritized, and therefore it tends to be more right-wing. But on the rest of the internet, do we think that there is a general rightward drift?
I think within certain segments of it, I think it's quite polarized. There's definitely increasing polarization. And specifically when you go down certain rabbit holes, it becomes very extreme. And I also think there's now becoming increased polarization between girls and boys and men and women. So when Andrew Tate was very prominent, an organization in the UK called Hope Not Hate interviewed teenage boys and teenage girls about what they thought of him. And it was like 50% of boys thought he was great and 1% of girls thought he was great. So the ecosystems people are being exposed to are very different. The kind of culture wars, this kind of very reactionary culture wars and flaming kind of reactionary content is becoming very popular, and therefore is kind of pushing people who might be vulnerable, I think, down specific paths.
And what do we fear is the ultimate consequence of this polarization? I mean, in the States, we sometimes see teenagers who take a machine gun and they'll, you know, go on a killing spree. But over here, what?
It's obviously a big concern is for girls and women. You know, misogyny permeates society, but if this is kind of mainstreamed and platformed and told to young men, like, you're meant to control women, you're entitled to these things, I do fear for the like girls in these boys' lives if they take on this content. Not every boy who's exposed to this, of course, will internalize it. But if it is, and then also, I do think the kind of polarization of views has knock-on effects for things like LGBT rights and racism. I think we're seeing that in Ireland a lot online. And we saw a lot of transphobia in our data set as well. That was a real...
How did that manifest itself?
A lot in the US reactionary content of like, you can't define a woman. You know, they're all blue-haired liberals. You know, it's a cult. It's a suicide cult. Like, really extreme language that was bordering on calling them groomers, which is, you know, very upsetting to see.
Because I would have thought that in Ireland, particularly in the last, you know, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, the general drift has been the other way. I mean, that it has become a more liberal, progressive country on those issues in particular.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing now across the globe is a kind of reaction to the right. And I think a lot of it is fueled by insecurity. You know, we were talking about in the report slightly about what might draw men to these ideas. And I think a lot of people are facing economic insecurity. They can't, you know, have homes or stabilities they wanted to. They're feeling that men are being slightly left out of the conversation, these kind of things, this insecurity kind of fuels.
They want someone to blame.
Yeah, and people want a quick answer and someone to blame. And I think a lot of strategic political actors, both in the manosphere and outside of that, are preying on that.
Okay. What do you think the big tech companies might do to improve this?
So I think there needs to be a real look at having more stringent and sophisticated moderation policies. I think that safety by design principles, looking at how these algorithms are designed in conversation with experts on gender-based violence, you know, bringing people like that into the conversation. I also think working closely with the media regulators like Commissioner Naman is really important. And the Irish Council for Civil Liberties and a large range of other NGOs talked about recommending whether these kind of recommender systems should be turned off by default and be an opt-in policy rather than a prerequisite.
That's a very interesting one. I mean, I'd be very surprised if that ends up happening because TikTok, you mentioned, for example, it's basically a recommender system. I mean, that is literally the reason that it took off so much. And that's the reason that Instagram Reels and that YouTube Shorts has taken off as well. It's entirely based on recommender systems.
And these companies are for-profit companies. And I think that's why academics, organizations, and things like the media regulator need to put pressure on them, because we need to put pressure on these companies to prioritize things somewhat over profits.
How do we think of these social networks when we think of, say, traditional media? Like, we're sitting at a podcast studio for the Irish Independent. We are legacy media. Other parts of the legacy media include Rupert Murdoch's The Sun, Fox News, MSNBC, CNN. You could absolutely charge almost any legacy media company with having bias, with pushing stuff because it's populist, even if it does a bit of damage. How do we think of of these two things side by side? I mean, is what we're seeing now worse or is it just different?
I think it is more polarized, and especially because people are having very different experiences. You know, with legacy media, the idea that we're all being exposed to similar ideas, whereas, you know, I go on TikTok and I see a very different thing to what these young men are seeing. And you can go down a rabbit hole where you're never exposed to other ideas. Mm. I think that's the harmful thing of going down a rabbit hole, especially for young people who may not have been exposed to these conversations or any information about these kind of ideas previously. It can be your only source of entertainment. And it's also entertainment. And it's very catchy and it sucks you in. You can spend hours on TikTok. I know I do sometimes. And it's kind of a
Would you prefer if part of your TikTok algorithm was something from a completely different worldview, or maybe even a worldview that you didn't agree with?
I think it's one of those things with algorithms. I'm not going to pretend that we don't, you know, the reason that these algorithms work on us is because it's nice to feel catered to, this kind of instant gratification of constantly getting exactly what you're exposed to. It does feel nice and it is easy, but I do think there needs to be more care of what that means. And yeah, I think, especially like as an adult who's had more exposure to these things, it is important to seek out or have access to other information. But I also think what's really important is that young people have access to critical media literacy skills to understand that even if they are being exposed to one view, the algorithm exists, that this is happening. So they can understand and contextualize it a bit more.
I wonder whether they don't already understand that algorithms are there. Like, we have a 21-year-old in the house and she's can absolutely run rings around us in terms of telling us what's going on and, you know, why we're seeing what we're seeing without any, without having studied it. But whether or not that means she's immune from being affected by that, she's not.
Yeah.
And I'm not, you know, and maybe you aren't.
No, I think we all, you know, we all have preconceived notions and biases and things that we are more likely to believe. And I also think that's why, in addition, things like relationship and sexuality education, education on gender, these things, so people can kind of make educated and informed decisions based on their wealth of experience. I think young people often, you know, the reason specific content is interesting because young people are interested in things about gender and sexuality and that, like, it's curiosity, and people don't have enough access to information, and we need to provide that.
Yeah, and I think social media networks probably do that, you know, as a default. Yeah, look, just want to go back into some of the stuff that comes out in this. We talk about crisis narratives, for example, men and masculinity being under threat. Red pill. Just remind us what red pilling is.
So red pill is a term that's used in the manosphere. You might be familiar with the Matrix, the taking of the blue pill or the red pill.
I never remember which one.
The red pill basically is that wakes you up to the realities of life.
Okay.
And what the manosphere would say is that you're being lied to, that feminism is taking over, that it's taking the rights of men, and that people are blinded to it. And
I mean, who's lying to us, though? Who do they think is lying to us?
Liberal media, feminists, women, any kind of mainstream progressive.
Like, the thing
values.
About the media is, it's not actually that liberal.
No, it's not. And I think it's often, this is the thing, it's culture wars and reactionary, this narrative of, like, everyone out there is super progressive and blue-haired feminists who wants to, you know, indoctrinate you. And, like, as someone who's a feminist media scholar, it's not that. The media is not that utopian.
Like, on X, for example, the biggest account is Elon Musk.
Yeah.
Who believes in things like the Great Replacement and conspiracy theories. You got people like Conor McGregor who run riot on media.
If anything, I think the social media landscape is more overtaken by these kind of reactionary and right-wing things. But it's often not about what's the reality. It's about a narrative that they're painting, and they're telling men, this is what's happening and you need to watch out.
Some of the stuff as well, it skirts mainstream conservative theories. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, this idea of traditional families, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that considered to be a toxic thing?
So it's more of the way it's which is presented. So it's not just saying, like, oh, some people want to stay at home with their children and everyone should have the economic means to do that, something I believe in. You know, I would be left wing, but I think that's, you know, everyone should have the means to live their life in that way if they want to. What they're saying is that women are biologically programmed to that way, and that anyone deviating outside of that is wrong, and that this is the only way to live your life.
Unless it's Candace Owens.
Yeah, exactly.
Who's a major influencer
and
in this area.
This is actually a thing that we saw. There was actually quite a few women. Like, Hannah Pearl Davies comes up a lot, and she's very in the run of red pill zeitgeist.
What does she say? I haven't come across her
She's
before.
Very anti-feminist, you know, that, like, feminists are taking over, that women are just going out now and sleeping wherever they want and becoming degraded and men have to settle for them. You know, all these kind of ideas that are very regressive, that women should stay at home, that they're biologically weaker, that they are pre-programmed to exist this way.
And which group of boys likes her? Is it the incels or is it the pickup artists? Or?
It's more in the influencer red pill kind of ideology, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So they like her message.
Yeah, she's on a lot of the podcast format kind of coming on.
In theory, then, the incels would probably love to meet some of the women she's talking about.
Yeah, in theory, but I honestly...
Given their idea of their own self-subjugation.
Yeah, it's interesting because she faces a lot of backlash from both sides because, you know, I don't know, it's very
How
interesting.
How dare you, kind of...
Yeah, and you're in a situation where, like, these people have been kind of told that, like, women, they'll kind of superficially be like, this is great, and bring her on to be like, look, a woman agrees with us. I think it's very tokenistic. They're like, you know, some women agree with us, some women want this, so why don't the rest of you?
To sum up, do we think this is doing damage?
Yeah, I definitely do think it's doing damage. Like I said, I don't think that every young man exposed this content. You know, men are critical thinkers and can take it up whatever way they understand. But if you have a small percentage of boys are taking this up, it's a very, very negative worldview. It rests on very, very negative views towards women. And that will naturally spill over to your life. And also, just for their own mental health, I do think it has very toxic narratives around mental health, which is very, very concerning.
Yeah, and just to remind listeners, all of this content came within hours of setting up the accounts?
The first exposure was always within 26 minutes. For each account, we only watched 2 to 3 hours. And by the end, 3/4 was that content. But, you know, some phones were being exposed within 10, 5, 2 minutes.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sure there's a lot more to delve down to that, but thank you for coming on the podcast, Dr. Catherine Baker, who, along with Professor Debbie Ging and Dr. Maya Brandt Andreasen from Dublin City University's Anti-Bullying Centre, did all of this research. Rory Bones was on sound. JJ Clark produced this episode. And my name is Adrian Weckler. You've been listening to The Big Tech Show, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Seachtain, an Indo-Askeilige.
Time I mon iarachtaí a dhéanamh teacht ar a chorp, agus súlagam amach anseo gur féidir é a chur in uaig ceart lena bhaintear féin.
Scíltí, fios, tuairimí.
Tá sé dochreite nach bhféadfadh ara i gcuir na meáin an cheist sin a eicáil.
Bhí an talam ag an am gribh orthchar an reachtam. Iadach sé tarann gribh an orthchar san i lis dúthail agus gimine fnacht gór a chlig sár ducha sin éachar. Now ni vin aon thar darach sin vin marav.
Seachtain. Find us on all the usual podcast platforms.